the long-awaited renewal of COFA, Wang Yi in New Zealand, a torture incident in West Papua, and more. Today is April 5th, 2024, and welcome back to Pacific Airwaves, a podcast on the Pacific Islands from the Southeast Asia Program and Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative at CSIS. I'm Andreika Natsalagawa, in the studio with Monica Sato from AMTI. Welcome back to the show, Monica.
It's really nice to be back, Andreika.
So you were recently traveling around Southeast Asia with CSIS to present on AMTI's recent report on environmental damage in the South China Sea. How was the trip?
It was good. It actually just was in Southeast Asia. We also went to Australia and Taiwan. It was a really fun trip, but also very exhausting. I didn't realize that traveling for a month and a half would just kind of drain the life out of me. No, but it was great. It was the first chance I had to really, I guess, talk as an expert on something. So I felt very fulfilled in a way. And I guess the reception to the report has also been very good, especially for countries like the Philippines, Taiwan, and Australia. Oh, and Japan.
That's great. Before we head on to the news, one last question. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite thing that you ate during your travels?
Oh, that's such a good question. If their listeners remember Harrison, he was also on the trip, at least to a couple of countries. We ate at this really small, like, Vietnamese restaurant that had, like, amazing pho. And I didn't realize that they also served, like, those Chinese donuts with it. Mm. So it was so good. It was, like, $1 for everything. So I kind of miss Southeast Asia prices.
It was a mistake asking you that question before we broke for lunch. So I'm very hungry now. So let's get to it. Lots of news about the Pacific Islands this month.
We should get into it. So kicking off a busy month, on March 8th, the U.S. Congress finally passed legislation to renew and fund the Compacts of Free Association Agreements, or COFA, as part of an omnibus package of the 2024 appropriation bills.
Monica, can you remind our listeners, what is COFA?
Sure. So it's a series of agreements between the United States and the countries of Micronesia, Palau, and the Marshall Islands, under which the U.S. provides economic assistance, including assistance in the form of trust funds, joint oversight committees, and sector grants. The recently passed legislation is the third round of funding for COFA, which, like the previous rounds, will last for 20 years.
And what does Washington get in return?
Under the treaties, Micronesia, Palau, and the Marshall Islands, or the Freely Associated States, allows the U.S. military to access their islands and also to deny similar military access to other countries.
So these treaties essentially govern political and economic relations between the United States and the Freely Associated States.
Yes, and they have been touted by the Biden administration as the bedrock of the U.S. role in the Pacific.
Even so, the passage of this legislation on March 6th in the House and March 8th in the Senate took an awfully long time.
So the process, delayed over 5 months, was dogged by bureaucratic red tape, congressional inattention, and in the case of the Marshall Islands, concerns regarding inadequate compensation for the nuclear legacy of U.S. atomic testing around the area, which we had previously discussed in other episodes.
That's right. Listeners who tuned into last month's episode of Pacific Airwaves might recall that leaders in Micronesia and Palau warned about the delay in renewing COFA funding and its implications for U.S. strategic access to the region.
Those remarks came on the heels of a failed bipartisan effort in the U.S. Senate to attach COFA funding to a $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan.
And geopolitics have loomed in the background of these negotiations, as analysts continue to link them with China's increasing role in the Pacific.
But it finally passed this month, after being tucked away in Section G under other matters of the 2024 Omnibus Appropriations Bill. So is this finally the end of the COFA saga?
Well, I'll check in with you in about 20 years and let you know.
I guess our listeners will have to look out for Season 20 of Pacific Airwaves for our next update on COFA then.
In other funding news, the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command has requested an additional $11 billion for the 2025 fiscal year.
The $11 billion request was submitted on March 11 as an unfunded priorities list of items not included in President Biden's 2025 budget proposal, which allocated $895.2 billion for defense.
A key item on the so-called unfunded priorities list is the bolstering of defense systems in Guam to counter Chinese ballistic, hypersonic, and cruise missiles. Indo-PACOM requested $430 million for the U.S. territory, which has been deemed a critical point for deterring China. It has also requested $3.3 billion for constructing infrastructure and facilities for U.S. military forces across the Indo-Pacific.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
Well, the United States has been making moves to step up its presence in the Pacific Islands, and seemingly in response to China's increasing influence in the region.
Okay, but stepping up might be an understatement. The $11 billion request by Indo-PACOM is nearly triple the previous year's $3.5 billion, and that's on top of a defense budget that went up 1% from fiscal year 2024.
Shortly following these funding requests, Daniel Crittenbrink, the Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs, spoke to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee about recent U.S. efforts to boost its presence in the Pacific.
In a March 14 hearing, Crittenbrink said that the U.S. will open an embassy in Vanuatu imminently and is working diligently to follow up in Kiribati, pending its parliament's approval.
And of course, Crittenbrink also reiterated warnings to Pacific Island nations about the dangers of establishing close ties with China.
Okay, so we're hearing a lot about China in this episode. What has China been up to in the Pacific this month, Andreka?
China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi recently visited New Zealand and Australia on back-to-back trips. In New Zealand, he met with Foreign Affairs Minister Winston Peters and Prime Minister Christopher Luxon.
Peters announced Wang Yi's visit while calling the Sino-New Zealand relationship one of the country's most important and complex.
These were the first in-person meetings between Wang Yi, Peters, and Luxon. Both Peters and Luxon are part of the new conservative government that gained control of parliament in October 2023.
And Luxon is slated to visit China in the coming months, according to Peters.
So what was on the agenda for the meeting?
Wang Yi and Peters discussed areas of cooperation, including shared goals of peace and stability, as well as trade, business, and security relations in the Indo-Pacific region.
That all sounds nice.
But they also addressed sticking points in their relationship, including human rights in Xinjiang, Hong Kong, and Tibet, New Zealand's engagement with the AUKUS Defense Pact, and New Zealand's broader concerns about Chinese activities in the region.
Still, both parties came away from the meeting sounding optimistic, despite leaving many significant differences unresolved. Wang Yi called the Sino-New Zealand relationship a force for stability with a healthy momentum, while Peters described the conversation as respectful, convivial, and very frank.
But as China mounts a charm offensive in New Zealand, the influence continues to reverberate across the domestic politics of Pacific Island nations.
Tell us what you mean.
Last month, you and Harrison examined the Solomon Islands elections to be held on April 15. Since then, incumbent Prime Minister Manasseh Songaverae has maintained his position as a frontrunner while continuing to lavish praise on China's political system.
Songaverae also suggested that democracy can lead to moral decay and gay marriage.
It certainly was a wild campaign speech. Also, you and Harrison covered Tuvalu, where Viletti Teo was elected prime minister in a February election closely watched by the U.S., China, and Taiwan.
And have there been any recent developments there?
Initial fears about whether the election would lead Tuvalu to scrap its landmark Pilipili Union with Australia and draw closer to China were all but erased when the country announced it would ratify the Security and Climate Migration Pact.
Parliaments in both countries will now move forward with the ratification processes, and both countries are hoping that the union will enter into force by the end of 2024.
And now back to New Zealand. The country has slipped into a double-dip recession amid rate hikes.
Stats New Zealand reported that the economy contracted 0.3% in 3 months and by 0.1% in the December quarter.
Do we know what's causing the drop in economic growth for New Zealand?
Well, some argue that the lingering effects of COVID are impacting the country's recession, but it has also been associated with the recent hike in interest rates.
And for our final news update, we'll be skipping over to Indonesia, where the military has issued a rare apology to all Papuans after a video surfaced showing a Papuan man being tortured by troops in the country's Papua region.
The graphic video shows the young Papuan man being beaten by soldiers and taunted with racial slurs, while crouching in a large barrel of water with his hands tied behind his back.
In response, the Indonesian army is carrying out an ongoing investigation into the incident, so far detaining 13 soldiers who were involved.
The incident has sparked the attention of the United Liberation Movement for West Papua and has led to calls for a UN human rights visit to be made to West Papua.
Benny Wenda, a West Papuan leader in exile in the United Kingdom, announced that torture is such a widespread military practice that it has been described as a mode of governance in West Papua.
We'll have to keep an eye on the case to see if the 13 soldiers end up being prosecuted for their role in the man's torture, or if any others are identified.
Or if the United Nations investigates human rights abuses in the region.
Absolutely. This atrocity can't be swept under the rug.
And that's all we have for today.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Pacific Airwaves. If you're looking for Pacific Waves, be sure to check out the daily news podcast from Radio New Zealand. Let us know what you think about our coverage by writing to our email at searadio@csis.org.
If you're not following us already, please subscribe or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite streaming platform.
Our producer is Marla Hiller. Special thanks to our interns Angus Lamb, Corey Donnelly, and Tappy Lung for their assistance with this episode. I'm Andreika Natsaligawa.
And I'm Monica Sato.
And we'll see you next month for another episode of Pacific Airwaves.